Number 23 in chapter number 5. So I'll speak this verse and you can repeat. We have a board here on which the verse is written for you to follow. Shaknoti haivaya sodhum praksharira vimokshanat kamakrodhodbhavam vegam sayukta sa sukhi nara. Translation: before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. Purport: if one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. There are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called Goswami or Swami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger, and thus the mind, eyes and chest become agitated. Therefore, one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. One who can do this is understood to be self-realized and is thus happy in the state of self-realization. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger. So today we have a very nice verse and explains a key concept on the path of devotional service or on the path of bhakti, which is very important for all of us as serious practitioners to know. Generally, apart from bhakti also, and apart from the Vedic culture, there are many other processes which can guide, which can help a practitioner to advance on the path of God realization, or trying to understand who we are, what is our relationship with God, and like that. Roughly speaking, all these different varieties of processes can be divided into two processes or two parts. One is called the Pravritti Marg and one is called the Nivritti Marg. So Nivritti Marg, as the name suggests, it advises, it helps to understand how to give up your attachments. Basically, it is a path of renunciation. It is a path where you give up your attachments, where you give up your likings. You tend to get detached from whatever you are doing. And the other process, which is called Pravritti Marg, or the other category, it helps us to continue with our activities. It advises us to continue with our activities, to not get more serious about detaching ourselves. However, what it helps us in is to purify those activities. So on one side, you may be doing certain things, you may be liking certain things, and the practitioner of the Nivritti Marg will tell you to let go of all those things that you are doing. So if you say, I go for an evening walk every day, so a typical answer would be, don't go on an evening walk. Or you say, I get up early in the morning, so they will say, don't get up early in the morning. Something like that. So whatever you propose, it will be negated. It will be said that don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, like that. So that is called Nivritti Marg. And Pravritti Marg is that whatever is your vritti, whatever is your inclination, it advises you to do that same activity. So, taking the same example, if you say that I like to go on an evening walk, Then if you meet some practitioner of the Pravruti Marg, he will tell you, where do you go in the evening? So you say, I go towards the beach. So he says, just next to the beach, just near to the beach, there is a temple. So once in a while you go on an evening walk to the beach, once in a while you can also go to the temple. So he does not cut your inclination. He does not cut your tendencies, but he guides you, but in a better way. Going to the beach has its own advantages, but going to the temple has much more advantages than going to the beach. Suppose somebody says, I want to get up early in the morning. I try to get up early in the morning, but then I don't do much after getting up early. So he'll say, see, anyways, you are getting up early. But what you could do is, after you get up early, one of these days, you can also come to a temple. Or you can read Bhagavad Gita early in the morning. It will be good for you. So the Pravruti Marg is much more natural. The Pravruti Marg is much more congenial for us to follow. The Nivruti Marg, if a new person who is not very serious meets somebody who is a follower of the Nivruti Marg, he will tend to get frightened. Because he just hears knows. He just hears, don't do this. This is not good for you. This is not correct for you, like that. But if you follow, or if you are being guided by somebody who is a follower of the Pravruti Marg, then it is much more easier for us. We'll say, yeah, he is encouraging me to do whatever I like. He's encouraging me to do whatever I am already used to doing. But he is just not stopping there. He is also giving it the right direction. He also says that once in a while you go to the temple. Once in a while you read some spiritual books. So Pravruti Marg is very nice and very easy. So if it is nice and if it is easy, it's natural, then why are there people who follow the Nivruti Marg? Then all of us, or all people who are on the path of self-realization, should practice the Pravruti Marg. The problem with Pravruti Marg is that since you are doing, or you are advised to continue with your activities, sometimes those thoughts or those desires still remain in your heart. As somebody who, let's say there is a patient and he eats something that is contaminating for him, and he goes to a doctor, and doctor says, from today onwards you can't eat that substance and this is the medicine. So when he says that, it's much more natural, it's easier for this person to just follow blindly the instructions of the doctor. He says, doctor has told me not to do this, so he'll not do that. But let's say you go to a doctor and doctor says, okay, what were you eating? You're eating this and this substance. Continue eating it, but eat it in a restricted quantity. So you are eating this substance, maybe, you know, you are drinking one glass of buttermilk and that caused you fever, that caused you cold. So the doctor says, from tomorrow onwards, don't stop drinking buttermilk, but take a little bit. Now, stopping altogether has its own advantages and has its own disadvantages. Advantage is that since you don't have that glass in front of you of buttermilk, you don't get tempted to drink more. But the disadvantage is, because you have been used to drinking buttermilk every day, it's difficult for you to give up that desire. Let's take the other case where the doctor advises you to take buttermilk, but in a limited quantity. What is the advantage? The advantage is, since you are used to taking buttermilk every day, it's easier for you to continue, because, you know, there's not much difficulty in that sense. But what is the difficulty there? The difficulty is to take that small quantity. Because you are used to taking a whole glass, and then suddenly you are told, you are advised to take it in a limited quantity. So then you take that first sip and then you say, it's nice and I'm used to taking it every day, so I should take more. So both these processes have their advantages and disadvantages. But our bhakti process, roughly it comes under the Pravruti Marg. There was one person, he came to our Acharya Prabhupada, and he was smoking 2 packs of cigarettes every day. So one pack contains, I think, 20 cigarettes or something. So he was smoking something like 40 cigarettes every day. When this person met Prabhupada, Prabhupada wanted to take him out of that bad habit. So Prabhupada told him, for the next 1 week, you just smoke 4 cigarettes every day. And there were some of his students who were there nearby, and they got a shock of their lives. They said, how Prabhupada is so much against intoxication. Prabhupada is so much against indulging in bad activities. How is Prabhupada saying that? But then, if you have a little intelligence, you could understand that directly advising this person who's smoking 40 cigarettes per day, if you directly tell him, from tomorrow onwards, become a good person. From tomorrow onwards, no more cigarettes. He'll probably never come to you to get any further advice. But for him, he said, okay, you want to smoke, I know. You are a habitual smoker, but continue smoking in a restricted quantity. So, he's helping him in reducing slowly his problem. And in due course of time, surely, that person reduced his smoking and then eventually he gave it up altogether. But if you would have been advised on the first day to give it up altogether, so don't smoke from today onwards, it would have been difficult for him. So Pravritti Marg is much more practical in that sense. Because in today's age, when not all of us have control over our senses, most of us have been brought up in an environment where we have been taught specifically to let go of all our inhibitions, to let go of all our restrictions that we ever heard. Do whatever you want. Do as you like. That is what is being taught to us. So especially in today's condition, it's much more advisable to follow the Pravritti Marg, or in our case, the Bhakti process, Krishna consciousness. And somebody could say that if this taste of your past activities still lingers, if you are still habituated to those desires, like I was talking about this person, let's say, you know, we are talking that he takes a glass of buttermilk and then he's advised just to take a little buttermilk. But then since he is doing that same activity, he has his own challenges that he has to stop where the doctor has told him. So the main challenge is how to overcome that urge to stop where the doctor has advised you to stop. How not to go overboard and resume the original activity. That is where the challenge is. So in today's verse that we are looking at, this is Lord Krishna's advice to us. He says, Shaknoti haiva sodhum. Sodhum, the word-to-word translation, Sanskrit, the sodhum means, he's saying tolerate. Any person who is able to tolerate the urges of the mind, urges of the senses, he is sa yukta sa sukhi nara. Sukhi, he is happy. Yukta, he is well situated. So if a person is able to tolerate the urges, then according to Krishna, he will be a happy person and he will be a well situated person. But if you ask an addict, if you ask a person who is habituated to doing certain wrong things, you ask him that from tomorrow onwards you should tolerate that urge. Now no more doing that same activity. He will be in a miserable condition. Is he going to be happy? No, he will be in a miserable condition. He is going to cry. He says, I am smoking 40 cigarettes every day and now you are telling me to smoke 4 cigarettes and now you are saying that I will be happy. How can I be happy? I will be miserable. But when Lord Krishna is advising us that such a person will be happy, he is speaking from a long-term perspective. Yes, you will be happy if you consider the avoidance of the bad effects that such intense smoking will have on you. If you consider the long-term effects of your habits, then you will be happy. Immediately if you consider, yes, on that day you are going to be unhappy. In fact, you have de-addiction centers where if a person wants to give up certain addictions, he's advised to give it up in proper association. He goes to those de-addiction centers. There are withdrawal symptoms. Whenever you give up certain addiction, there are withdrawal symptoms. You need help. So he's going to be miserable. If you observe an addict of maybe drugs, drinking liquor, smoking, who's addicted to a certain habit, and then when he's advised that don't do this, and he understands very well that this is not good for me, but when he tries to give up that habit, he suffers a lot of withdrawal symptoms and he needs help. So in that condition, he's going to be miserable, certainly. But when Lord Krishna or when devotees tell us that such a person is going to be happy, they are talking from a long-term perspective. Their perspective is not a small perspective. Their perspective is not of the immediate days. They are speaking keeping in view our whole lives. So today's solution that is given by Krishna is sodom, is tolerate. We'll just see how this tolerate, this option of tolerating can work out for us. Yesterday in the previous verse, that is 5.22, is one of the key verses of Bhagavad Gita, very important verse, says yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adi antavanta tu konteya na teshu ramate buddha. In this verse, Lord Krishna yesterday has told us that whenever there is a contact of material senses with material sense objects, for example, my eyes want to see some beautiful object. So when there is a contact between my eye, my vision, and that object, I get pleasure. My hands want to touch something that is very soft. So when my hands touch that soft object, there is contact between my object and my sense. So Krishna is saying, whenever such an object and a sense contacts each other, and whenever there is some pleasure that is gained by it, in due course of time, that same pleasure will lead you to misery. And then he makes an important point. He says, why? Because it has an adi, it has a start, and it has an anta, it has an end. And then his final conclusion is, na teshu ramate buddha. A buddhiman vyakti, buddha, an intelligent man, he does not take pleasure in such an activity. So the word used in yesterday's verse was ramate. And in today's verse, Krishna is advising sodom. So how are these two words connected? There is one thing that is that I'm trying to restrict some of my activities which I have realized are not good for me. But in doing so, I may get thoughts about those activities. I may have my past remembrances about those activities. Suppose I have a group of friends and we used to go to a certain place. And now I have stopped doing that. So even if I am not physically doing that activity, those thoughts still remain in my mind. Whenever I see some of those friends, or whenever I see any group of friends, then I immediately remember. At one point of time, I had my own group of friends. I used to go to that place and had a lot of fun with them and like that. So even on a mental level, there could be some lingering. In the evening after this class, they'll rub off this verse from this board, because tomorrow there will be another verse. But if you see, and when you come and you see, after rubbing off this, there will be still impressions of this current verse that is written on the board. There will be faint outline of these words. So they are, you could say, when we talk of restricting our activities, but the samskaras are all there. Whatever activities we have done, whatever thoughts have been there, whatever proclivities we have, whatever tendencies we have, it's like you write something on this board and then you rub off, but still you will see some impressions on the board. So similarly, our mind also has a lot of impressions from the past. And you may rub off those impressions by stopping activities, but the samskaras in the form of those faint alphabets on that board, they'll still remain. So you'll still be disturbed in your mind. But what is Krishna's advice? Na teshu ramate buddha. Ramate buddha means you don't take pleasure. You don't think again and again. When you see a group of friends, continuing with our example, I can just close my eyes and say, I'm not doing anything. I'm not going with my friends and continuing with that same activity that I used to do. But I can just close my eyes and I can start contemplating, sitting in one corner and think. And think that, oh, at one point of time, I used to go to this place. I had my own group of friends. So mentally, I can enjoy that activity. Even though physically, I have stopped. But mentally, I can enjoy. So Krishna is saying in yesterday's verse, na ramate. You should not even enjoy contemplating such activities. And today, he gives another step to it, that not only should we not enjoy such thoughts, not only should we not indulge ourselves in such thoughts, but we should patiently tolerate such thoughts. Those thoughts will be there. He's not denying that these thoughts will suddenly vanish. We have our own past. We have our own activities. And just becoming a devotee or starting to practice devotional service does not guarantee. Nowhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you had some past, and the day you start chanting Hare Krishna, the day you start reading Bhagavad Gita, all your dirty desires, all your past conditionings will just vanish into thin air. He never says that. We never claim that. However, what we claim is, this is a process. And by following this process, just like you go to a doctor and you take a certain therapy from him. Even if you take, if you have some disease and you take some medicine, which is a proper medicine for the disease, any person will agree it takes a certain time for the medicine to act on you and for the disease to go down. Is it not? No disease, you have that disease and you take a pill, you take some medicine and immediately it vanishes. Never happens like that. And if you have an experience, let's say, somebody of you says that, yes, at one point of time I had a disease and somebody gave me a pill, somebody gave me some medicine. As soon as I put it on my tongue, immediately my disease went away. You should understand that there was something wrong with that medicine. That may not be a medicine at all. That may be just a painkiller. That may be something that just kills off the sensation of pain that you felt when you had the disease. Any proper medicine has its own time that it takes to kill that disease. And if you are getting very fast recovery, then it's time to recheck whether you are taking the proper medicine or you are just being dished out an ordinary painkiller by the doctor. So similarly, when somebody comes to the bhakti process, we may stop doing physically those activities that we were doing, but the samskaras will still remain. The impressions on our heart will still remain. The thoughts may suddenly spring up. Prabhupada, in one of the purports in Bhagavad Gita, he gives an example. Sometimes you go to a river, sometimes you go to a pond, and on the side, sometimes, you know, there is marshy land, there are some grass there. And if you are patient, if you just observe, once in a while some bubble, it rises sometimes to the top and it bursts. All of a sudden, there is no reason to it. You are just watching a pond of water, a stationary body of water, and suddenly a bubble will come and say, put, like that. So where from that bubble comes? So Prabhupada compares it, there are a lot of impressions in our heart. There are a lot of unnecessary thoughts deep down inside our heart. When we practice devotional service, we are engaging ourselves in good activities, in proper activities. We are surrounding ourselves with good people. And based on their purity, nothing to do with our efforts, nothing to do with our sadhana, but just because we are always surrounded by pure people, their purity, when we are reading these books, the purity of this book, it has its effect on us, and all those dirty unwanted things, dirty unwanted desires in our heart will be subdued temporarily. But the moment we become lax in our sadhana, the moment we become loose in our practices, immediately that pressure that is there in our heart is loosened and that bubble will suddenly come up and burst. And then we can understand, my God, I didn't know that those impressions are still there in my heart. I thought in due course of time I had overcome all my past impressions. I had no more ill desires in my heart. But no, when you become a little bit loose in your practices, you can immediately see those desires again pop up. So Krishna also here, he is not artificially claiming that if you follow this process of bhakti, everything will vanish in a day. No, he is saying we have to learn to tolerate. Shaknoti haiva iha sodum prak sharir vimokshanat. Now the tendency generally, if we analyze our own behavior, it is when we get those desires, sometimes we may artificially claim, no, I don't have any problem, I don't have any desires. I am a really a pure person. I am a pure devotee. If you meet any new person who's coming to the temple, or if we speak about ourselves, first time we come to the temple, we see that temple is a very nice place, everything is very pure here, auspicious here, and then you realize that there's a lot to be learnt. After 1 or 2 months, you develop friendship with some devotees here, and you learn how to offer obeisances, how to take darshan, you also learn the Hare Krishna mantra, so whenever there is some kirtan going on, you can follow along with the kirtan. There is a tendency in a common person who has just started on the path of devotional service to think, I'm almost there now.
When I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, I hear about this concept called pure devotee. Pure devotee is a person who's very pure. And I think I'm just there. Another 5 months, another 6 months, and I'll control my anger. Another 1 or 2 months, I'll control my lust. Give me 1 year, Prabhu. I am going to be a pure devotee. All the 6 anarthas I am going to conquer. So artificially sometimes, out of ignorance, we may claim or we may think, genuinely we may think, that I have almost achieved mastery over controlling my unwanted emotions. Then, as you realize, after some time you understand, it's not so easy. The impressions are deep down. So yes, I have reduced the occurrences of these emotions. So before coming to devotional service, before coming regularly to the temple, I used to become angry almost every day. Now that I am reading Bhagavad Gita, now that I am chanting Hare Krishna, now that I am associating with devotees, I am getting angry only once in 2 days. So it's an improvement for me. However, we have a long, long way to go. What is desirable is, we never become angry at all. Of course, when the situation demands, when there is somebody who is blaspheming the Lord, when somebody is blaspheming the pure devotees of the Lord, we may become angry. But generally, when we speak of anger, it is always spoken as a negative emotion. It is spoken as something that is undesirable. So, generally there is a tendency to artificially claim that no, there are no problems with me. It has been 6 months since I have been regularly coming to the temple. I know what is what. I know Krishna is a supreme person. I know Bhagavad Gita is a very practical textbook. I think I have reached that state of being a pure devotee. Generally, that is a tendency. Another tendency is just seeing the sheer bulk of these negative emotions that we have. Just trying to understand, my God, it's so deep in me. There's so much anger. There's so much lust. There is so much pride that I have. Sometimes one may give up hope. One may think, it's not working out for me. It's working for him, for every person in this temple who's coming. But for me, I am so contaminated, I am so fallen, I am so full of these negative emotions that actually I can't practice this devotional service. So both of these things are extremes at two ends. One extreme is you artificially think that you are beyond all unnecessary things, that you have already achieved purity. And the other extreme is you consider yourself so unworthy of purification that you think this process is not going to work out for me. So any honest person should understand that both these extremes are not desirable. Both these extremes are not good for us. Neither we should artificially claim that I am almost a pure devotee now. I have controlled anger, I have controlled lust, just some pride, some remnants of pride are there and some illusion is there. In another 6 months and I should be fine. We should never think like that. Also, we should never think that this process does not have any hope for me. Who are we? If there's this verse, I'm trying to recollect this verse. This verse just came to my mind right now. In the 5th canto, in the chapter where the residents of Jambudvip, they offer prayers to the Lord. Hanumanji, there's a prayer by Hanuman. I'm trying to recollect that verse. He prays to Lord Ramchandra. I think it goes like this. He says, Na janmanunam mahato na saubhagam na vak na krutis na toshahetu. I don't remember the next 2 lines, but this is a very nice verse. It caught my attention. He says, Na janmanunam mahato na saubhagam. Hanumanji is describing himself and his friends. He says, look at us. We didn't have a high birth. The birth of a monkey, is it a very high birth? No. Monkey is generally treated as a mischievous animal. Not a very high birth. So he says, Na janma nunam mahato na saubhagam. And we are not very fortunate also. We are born, we are doing our ordinary activities in the jungle. And then Lord Ramchandra came and we got an opportunity to serve him. So Na janma nunam mahato na saubhagam. Na vak na krutis na tatosha hetu. Na vak. Neither we can speak big words. We are not some learned brahmanas that we have mastered the Vedic scriptures and we can glorify the Lord in very nice poetic verses. Monkeys, how much intelligence do they have? How much How nicely can they glorify the Lord? Na vak, na akruti. Akruti is the form. So he's saying sometimes people could be very beautiful in their bodily shape. He's saying monkeys, they don't look very beautiful. Their face is not beautiful. They have a tail behind. So he's saying the next two lines, he glorifies Lord Ramchandra is saying, but Lord Ramchandra is so great that he has accepted service even from us. Lord Ramchandra is a supreme personality. He could have defeated Ravan and his whole army single-handedly. But he wanted to take service from us. He wanted to deliver us. By engaging in Lord Ramchandra's service, we got benefited. Lord Ramchandra did not benefit. So he glorifies the Lord. So if even monkeys can get delivered, if monkeys can get purified by performing devotional service, we still have hope. However contaminated we may be, we still have hope. So both these extremes are not good for us. Thinking artificially that we are pure, also thinking that we are so contaminated that this process cannot work for us. So then what is reality? The real expectation from us is that we accept our situation, that yes, I have problems. I am still suffering from lust. I still have bouts of anger. I am still deeply steeped in illusion. But what is my hope? My hope is that the Lord is very merciful. My hope is that His devotees are very merciful. My hope is that devotees don't look at my past. So many hippies, they came to Prabhupada and they accepted that process. And Prabhupada never asked them, oh, which family you were born in? What all did you do before coming to devotional service? Now that you are chanting Hare Krishna, what you were doing in the past? No. If you are ready to accept the process, if you are ready to follow the instructions of the Supreme Lord as received in the parampara, your past is immaterial. However contaminated you may be, you will be delivered. So us also, if we accept our fallen condition and not just stop there, but take shelter of devotees, we pose our questions to them, we take shelter and we ask them, my dear Prabhu, I am here in this situation. I'm so many times I'm feeling angry, so many times I'm feeling lusty. So many times I become proud of unnecessary things. Can you help me? Is there some help possible for me? Devotees surely will help us. So that is something that will actually help us come out of that situation. Not artificially imagining ourselves to be pure or artificially thinking that we are so contaminated that this process cannot help us. No. Real help will be in accepting our true situation and seeking help from devotees. That is how we'll advance. Now in accepting our true position in front of devotees, there will be some small hitch. What is that hitch? For a conditioned living entity like you and me, to accept our faults is a big stumbling block. Is it not? To go to somebody and say, I have a problem. I get angry. I get lusty. It takes some time to overcome this initial shortcoming. It's only after some time will we learn to reveal our hearts to devotees. It will take us some time. So that is something that we have to tolerate. So when we are walking on this path where we embrace reality, not artificiality, even there we have to learn to tolerate. That sometimes we may think that no need to accept my frailties, no need to accept my shortcomings in front of devotees, no. Even though sometimes we may face apparent dishonor. There is no dishonor in front of devotees, there is no dishonor. But that's the game that our mind plays, that you know, you're going to reveal your fallen condition to that devotee? Come on, you can't do this. You can't tell him that you are fallen. You can't tell that you are suffering from so many problems. So that is something that we have to learn to tolerate. There's this story to understand this concept better. This is something that comes in the tradition of the Red Indians. The Red Indians are the native people of America. Before the Europeans reached there, the land was inhabited by Red Indians. And they have a very nice way of understanding this concept that we are trying to understand today. They say, the tradition says, in this story, there's this old man, Red Indian, who's advising his grandson. His grandson says, Grandfather, sometimes I become angry on my friends. And sometimes I realize that actually I should not have been angry. Later I realize that all that anger that I displayed on my friend was not good for him, and neither it was good for me. Now my relationship with him is strained. So what should I do? He goes and approaches his grandfather. So his grandfather tells him, "My dear grandchild, it is said that there are two dogs inside us. Inside every person, this is as per the Red Indians. And this will help us to understand, so it's good for us. They say that there are two dogs inside us. One is a good dog and one is a bad dog. And both of them exist in every person. For us, we could say that there are tendencies in us to help somebody or to hurt somebody. To think good about somebody, to think ill about somebody. We all have experience about this. Sometimes somebody needy comes to us, there is one voice in us which tells us, help him, he needs your help. There's another voice which tells him, why you want to help him? There are so many people to help him. You continue with your own work. Don't pay much attention to him. So these two opposing voices are always there in us. So the Red Indians have this concept of two dogs. And as he said that, this grandchild said, so how to understand this? So he said, there is always a competition between these two dogs. The good dog and the bad dog, they are always trying to catch our attention. So this grandchild said, then grandpa, which of these two dogs wins? When a situation comes, does the good dog win or does the bad dog win? How to understand that? Under what condition does one of these two win? So the grandfather smiled and he said, that dog will win who will be stronger. If they are fighting with each other, the stronger dog will win. And how will a dog become stronger? If he gets food, if he gets nourishment. So grandpa said that out of these two dogs, the dog whom you feed the most, he will win. So when you are faced with a situation, when you have two opposing voices inside you, one is a good voice and one is a bad voice, which voice do you pay more attention to? When these two dogs, the good dog and the bad dog, they are trying for your attention, which dog do you feed? If you are continuously feeding the bad dog, you are starving the good dog. You can feed only one dog at a time. So if you are, in every instance, whenever there is an opportunity, if you feed the bad dog is going to become strong. The bad dog is going to become healthy. And the good dog is starving. The good dog will perish. So in due course of time, you won't have even the good dog trying to get your attention. You won't hear its voice. It's already dead. All you will hear is the voice of the bad dog. And suppose somebody always feeds the good dog. In due course of time, the bad dog will starve. So you'll never hear the voice from the bad dog. But what you will hear is the voice of the good dog. So you'll always end up doing good to others, doing good activities. For us, as practitioners who have left certain activities after coming to devotional service, because we are followers of Pravruti Marg, but we are doing those activities in a very regulated way, in a proper way. We also eat, but we eat it after offering it to Krishna. We also sing, but we sing in connection with Krishna. We dance, but we dance in connection with Krishna. We go to different places, but we go to different places in connection with Krishna. So we are doing all those activities, but we are doing it in a purified way. So that taste is still there. Those samskaras are still there in our heart. Those bubbles still sometimes rise in the pond of our consciousness. So those two voices are still there in us. Now we have a choice. Which voice do we pay more attention to? Which dog do we pay more attention to? If we feed the good dog, then in due course of time, the bad dog will perish. And now, after some time, we'll never even hear the voice from the bad dog. So, if we tolerate for some time, what will happen? If we tolerate for some time, and if we pay more attention, we feed the good dog, the voice of the bad dog will still be heard, but we don't pay any attention to it. We tolerate that situation. In due course of time, that voice will die out. In due course of time, that dog will perish. And only the good dog will remain. So it is advisable to tolerate the urges. Any farmer or any person, there are, not to speak about farming, even in the cities now many people take a lot of interest in gardening. People have their small pots of flower plants and all in their own homes. So any person who's interested in gardening or who has done a little bit of gardening knows, when you plant a good tree, a good plant which bears flowers or something like that, something that is desirable, along with the plant, there will grow some weeds in that small pot. You will see some grass, unwanted grass growing. Now, if you feed without paying any attention to those unwanted grass, to those unwanted weeds, if you are pouring water, if you provide nourishment, what will happen? The main plant that you want to provide nourishment for, the main plant to which you are providing all the water, it will perish. So again, we come to that same concept, that both these things will exist. But what we have to do is, we have to go on continuing feeding the good dog, or in this case, you have to go on taking care of the tree that you have planted. So what do you do with that other weeds? You slowly weed them out. If you neglect them artificially, they'll create a lot of problem. So what is desirable is, you pay more attention, less like you fed the good dog and you did not feed the bad dog. You give a lot of care and attention to the plant that you have planted, and don't give any nourishment, don't give any attention to those weeds that will automatically sprout. Any plant you take, any mass of mud you take, there are going to be some weeds there, but don't pay any attention to it. Don't provide nourishment for it. So desires will always be there. Activities have been stopped, but the samskaras are there, desires will be there. And the other thing that is mentioned in this verse today is kama krodhodbhavam. So kama is desire, and krodh is the other unwanted emotion that will always be there. So Krishna is saying, kama krodhodbhavam vegam sa yukta sa sukhi nara. So desires will be there always because of our past habits. Where does krodh come into the picture? In one of the verses in the Bhagavatam, krodh is described as kamanuj. You have Lakshman, who's described as Ramanuj. Anuj means the younger brother, or the brother who took birth after the elder brother. So first Lord Ramchandra took birth, and then Ramanuj, or Lord Lakshman, he took birth. He followed him into this world. So similarly, when they say krodh is kamanuj, it means whenever you have kam, whenever you have lust, whenever you have desires, sure enough, after some time, krodh is going to follow. Why will it follow? Because in the previous verse, Krishna has said that adi antavanta tu konteya na teshu ramate buddha. He says, yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. The very contact of material sense object and a material sense, which is a source of happiness now, is going to be a source of misery tomorrow. So if you are enjoying some object today, be sure to understand that in due course of time, you will feel that the happiness that you are deriving from that object is no longer there. Dukha yonaya evate. It is going to be a source of dukha. Today it is giving you bhoga. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga. So today it is giving you happiness. Today it is giving you pleasure. But in tomorrow, after some time, it is going to give you unhappiness. This is if you get it. What if you don't get it? Suppose I want to enjoy. I want to drink water. I am very thirsty right now. I want to drink water. I open this lid. I check in this glass and there is no water. Let's say. I'll be angry. I'll get frustrated. I'll get irritated. I'll say, here I am. I want to drink water and there is no water being supplied. So I'll get irritated. So in both the cases, there is frustration. In both cases, there is following of krodh. If you get it, you realize that it was hollow. It was empty. The amount of happiness that was promised is not there. In due course of time, yehi samsparsha jab hoga, dukha yonaya evate. The same object will give me misery. And if I don't get that object, again there is krodh. So that's why krodh is called kamanuj. That's why anger is always a concomitant factor to lust or greed. So both these things will trouble us, and we have to tolerate, we have to learn to tolerate them. Now somebody would say, yes, I accept, I understand that I have to learn to tolerate. There are those two voices in me, and I should always feed the good voice, and I should always take care of the good plant. And yes, I know that sometimes there will be some bubble of unwanted desires rising in my heart. I understand all that. But how long? How long will this go on? Is there not a stage reached when you will promise to me, I accept it, I understand that it's not going to be as easy as 6 months, as easy as 1 year, 6 years, but give me some date. Tell me something so that there is some hope for me. Till that time, I'll tolerate. I accept that yes, Krishna says tolerate and that is the process and I'll tolerate. But till how long? That is also answered by Krishna. He says, Prak Sharir Vimokshanat. Prak Sharir Vimokshanat means till the time you give up this body. So Krishna is not giving us any false promises. He's making it very clear for us. He's not saying, do it for 6 years, do it for 10 years, do it for 12 years, 18 years. No. His expectation is much, much longer. He's saying, Prak Sharir Vimokshana. Do it, learn to tolerate till you give up this body. One would question, does it mean that this process is not efficient? Does it mean that this process is not strong enough to remove contamination? No. The process is very strong. However, the limitation is on our side. It is us who are limited in our ability to accept the process. You are taking medicine, but there is so much contamination that the medicine that you are taking, you sometimes forget to take that medicine. Sometimes the conditions that are necessary for taking the medicine, sometimes you know you take some medicine and it is advised that you take food, first you take lunch, first you take dinner and then you take that medicine. So that is a condition that is helping for that medicine to have its good effect on you. And sometimes we have seen that people who are advised to take such medicines, they may sometimes forget to take the medicine post taking their food. So sometimes we forget taking the medicine, sometimes we forget the necessary conditions for taking the medicine. Limitation is on the part of the diseased person. Limitation is not on the part of the therapy. So similarly, this process is very strong. However, it is we who are not very serious, who are not very convinced that this is the process that will help me. And if we don't have conviction, if we don't have faith in the process, how can the process help us? If I embrace a tree with my own hands and say, leave me, leave me, leave me. Who's holding whom? I am holding the tree. The tree is not holding me. As soon as I give up my attachments, as soon as I let go of my embracing that tree, I am free. So it is us who have unnecessarily embraced all the things of this world. And so when we slowly practice this process, slowly our embrace of that tree, our grip of that tree will get loosened. And then we'll get free. This is a very nice story, short story to understand this. That once Akbar, he also had this question. And he was thinking that people I see, even in powerful positions, very highly learned people, very important people, they also don't have control over their emotions. They also sometimes get a fit of anger. They also sometimes can't control themselves. So how long does this continue? And he posed this question to Birbal. So Birbal said, this goes on till the end of your life. As long as you are here in this material world, which is a contaminated place, contamination, there is always a chance of contamination. So he said, can you give me a practical proof of this? So Birbal said, okay, tomorrow let us go to the state prison. Their kingdom had a prison. And he said that tomorrow when you come, you can also bring your young daughter along with you. Akbar did not understand what Birbal is meaning by this. But he had trust on Birbal, that Birbal is a good, sane person and he'll not misapply the situation in any way. So it turned out later, the next day morning, Akbar came there with his young daughter and Birbal was also there. And there was this old man who was sentenced to life imprisonment and he was undergoing his sentence and he was almost about to die in that prison. He's old and you know his life has been in that prison, so not a very pleasant life. So one would expect that in this situation where there was no pleasure available to him of any sort in a prison for a long, long time, his desires must have died out. So to test out the situation, Birbal said that now when we'll go and meet this prisoner who's just about to die, I'll enter from this side and you also enter from this side, from one side of that bed on which that prisoner was lying, and let your young daughter, beautiful daughter, enter from the other side. And just be watchful of his eyes. Where does he see? And yes, Akbar and Birbal came from this side and the beautiful daughter entered from that side. And sure enough, Akbar saw that when Akbar and Birbal entered from this side, the prisoner, old emaciated prisoner, had been in confinement for a long, long time. His eyes certainly went towards Akbar and Birbal because two important, nicely dressed people entered the prison cell. But as soon as this young daughter of Akbar came from this side, immediately his eyes went that side. So that attraction, that tendency to seek pleasure was still there. Although he is old, although he has not had any kind of pleasure whatsoever in that prison cell, he was suffering punishment after punishment, just about to die. But still, those samskaras are there. Whatever enjoyment he has done in his youth, before he became a prisoner, before he came into that situation, those samskaras were still there. And when an opportunity was there, immediately those samskaras came up. Immediately that bubble came up. And then Akbar said that, yes, I can understand that these contaminations in our heart will be there till the end of our lifetime. And we have to learn to tolerate. So the solution is, if there are samskaras in our heart that will always rise, no matter how good you are in your sadhana, let us use this characteristic of ours to help ourselves. What I am proposing is, we have samskaras, and since we were doing contaminated activities before, those samskaras are there, which are contaminated samskaras. And now that we have taken to a pure way of life, still those samskaras are there. Now, let us replace those contaminated samskaras by good samskaras, by pure samskaras. Let us engage ourselves in bhakti, in the right process, in such an intense way that there is no time for that bubble to rise. There is no time for us to hear the bad voice of that bad dog. Let us practice devotional service with such intensity that all those unwanted samskaras that are there in our heart, we don't wipe them off, but we replace them with good samskaras. The tendency of us is that samskaras will remain. Whatever activities we have done to a greater degree, they will always remain. So today, if we see our situation, we have done a lot of unwanted activities and we have done a little bit of desirable activities. What we can do now is, the choice that is there in our hand is, now we should do unwanted activities in a very less degree. Why? Because that conditioning is still there. We won't artificially jump and think that we are pure. No. Sometimes we may have our own problems, but we'll restrict it as much as possible. And we'll replace all our activities with pure activities. So now, in this situation, we have contaminated samskaras and very few desirable activities. Let us change the situation. Let us reverse the situation. Let us now have very nice, strong, desirable samskaras and very few undesirable activities. Check out the life of Ajamil in the Bhagavatam. Why was he saved at the end of his life? Because we were talking of Prak Sharir Vimokshanath. We talked of this example of this prisoner who till the very last breath of his life still had those contaminations in his heart. The other example, positive example that is given in the Bhagavatam is of Ajamil. Ajamil was a Brahman who at the last breath of his life, just when the Yamdutas had come to claim him and take him to punish, to be punished to hell, he remembered his son whom he had named Narayan. And it is described in the Bhagavatam how in his early youth, he was a very pious Brahman, very good person, always engaged in the service of Lord Narayan. So for him, he had very good pious samskaras. And later he became degraded. But because the samskaras were there, he named his son Narayan. He could have named Tinky, Pinky, Chinky, anything. There are so many names. But what he named Narayan. Narayan is the name, holy name of the Lord. That is the advantage. So for us, you and me today, our problem is that we have contaminated samskaras. And for Ajamil, the advantage that he had was, he had very nice, strong, pious, devotional samskaras. So in the future, even when he got contaminated, those samskaras were there, and he named his small son Narayan, even though he was leading a very degraded life. But those samskaras made him name his son as Narayan. And at the last few moments of his life, when he was just about to die, just like for us, our contaminated samskaras may pollute us. For him, his good, desirable samskaras saved him. And he called out loudly, Narayan, Narayan, like that. He was calling out to his small son because he was attached to his son. But turned out that calling out the holy names of Lord Narayan, the Narayan Dutas came. The servants of Lord Narayan came, the Vishnu Dutas came, and they saved Ajamil. So that is something that we can learn, that we just learn to tolerate our unwanted samskaras, and at the same time, we replace our unwanted samskaras with desirable samskaras. If we do this, the same samskaras that are today a cause of bondage for us will become the cause for liberation for us. So then, this praksharir vimokshanat will be simple. No problem. At the last moment of my life, all these strong samskaras that I'll have of my good life, they'll help me remember the Lord. Probably I'll also call out, Narayan, Narayan, Krishna, Krishna, and I'll also perfect my life. So this is some thoughts. These are some thoughts that I had. I'll stop here. If somebody has any questions, then we can take a few questions.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your lecture. That one thing I failed to understand that in this, when Lord Ramachandra, throughout his life, you see his life, he was born in means a king family, and when Mother Sita stolen by Ravana, and throughout his life he was always means dukhi. What I understand, and still then when he was para dukhe dukhi, how someone can become like that? I want to know.
We can't become like that.
At last, when Mother Sita came, even if Mother Sita was not. Lord Ram was separate and Mother Sita was separate, like that.
Okay, I didn't get your question then. So previously he was unhappy and then he got Mother Sita?
No. Throughout his life, Lord Ram was dukhi, like that. How someone can become like that?
How someone can remain dukhi?
Like that.
It is explained that Lord Ramchandra was playing the role of an ordinary human being in that particular pastime. He is playing that role. So, he is showing how, in one purport actually, Prabhupada explains that the lesson to be learned from his life is, if somebody is too much attached to his wife, then this is the condition that one lands in. This is the lesson that Prabhupada mentions in one of the Bhagavatam purports. As far, I don't know much about the nature of the Supreme Lord in his form as Lord Ramchandra. Why he acted in that way is up to him. But this is something that we can learn from him. The Acharyas have explained to us that something that we could learn from his life is that if somebody is too much attached to his wife, then this is the situation that he lands in. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much for your patience. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.